On About Books, we delve into the latest news about the publishing industry with interesting insider interviews with publishing industry experts. We'll also give you updates on current nonfiction authors and books, the latest book reviews, and we'll talk about the current nonfiction books featured on C-SPAN's Book TV. And welcome to the About Books podcast and program. In this episode, it's an update on what's going on in the publishing world and a look at some new books being published. We'll also introduce you to Keith Urban. He's the president of a literary agency, and we'll find out exactly what that is and what he does. But first, let's start with this week's publishing industry news. Now, a recent Axios report looks at the rise in challenged and banned books in public school libraries. According to the American Library Association, there were over 300 challenges to books in school libraries in just 3 months last year. That eclipsed the 156 challenges in all of 2020. Now, one of the most targeted titles has been Alex Gino's novel about a transgender girl. It's entitled George. Retired Texas librarian Carolyn Foote told Axios, quote, "We might have one big challenge, like every 2 years. I have to say that what we are seeing is really unprecedented." Also in the news, Hunter Biden's ex-wife is writing about her life and the end of her marriage due to what she says was Mr. Biden's substance abuse and infidelity. The book is entitled If We Break. It's being published by Crown and will be available in June. Also in the news, author and critic Terry Teachout died recently at the age of 65. He was a regular theater and arts columnist for the Wall Street Journal, and he was also the author of numerous books, including biographies of H.L. Mencken, Louis Armstrong, and Duke Ellington. And in more news, former Attorney General William Barr is publishing a memoir of his time as Attorney General in both the Trump and George H.W. Bush administrations. Its title, One Damn Thing After Another, and it will be on sale March 8th. Now, according to the NPD book scan, print book sales got off to a rocky start for the new year, down close to 14% for the week ending January 8th. Now, this could be a post-holiday slump, a reminder that 40% of all books are sold during the holiday period. Well, what do Donald Rumsfeld, Senator Tom Cotton, Donna Brazile, and John Boehner all have in common? We'll give you one answer, and that's that they've all worked with the Javelin Literary Agency here in Washington, D.C. The president of that organization joins us now on About Books, Keith Urban. Mr. Urban, when did you start Javelin, and is it fair to call it a literary agency at this point?
It is, Peter. We're one of the literary agencies here in D.C. We started, it's my partner Matt Latimer and I did 10 years ago, just over that. We celebrated our 10th anniversary last fall. And we've been, we love what we do. And it's fun to work with authors, some of them you named. I think we've worked with about 150 authors at this point in 10 years. I like to think we have the funnest job in Washington, D.C. with just all the conversations we have, all the intelligence we're hearing. It's just it's a fun job to be at the intersection of publishing, media, and politics. It's a joy.
Well, Mr. Urban, what does a literary agent do?
Well, we are, an uncharitable way of putting it would be mercenaries. We're sort of the middlemen between authors and publishers, and we try to get our authors the best possible deal, which is usually in the form of an advance from publishers. And most of them are based in New York, the publishers. They're five big ones, HarperCollins, Simon Schuster, Macmillan, Hachette. And we work to work with our authors to come up with book proposals, basically the ideas for books. And then we go out and sell them. And what makes us a little different as agents from a lot of people in the industry is, my background, as you alluded to, is as a writer. I was a Pentagon speechwriter for a number of years, as was my partner, who's a speechwriter as well, as well as for the president. And, so we work with our authors to sort of come up with book ideas and help sharpen those ideas to the most commercial idea possible. And then we work with them to help in some cases, help them write the book. And then we have a whole in-house publicity team that works with our authors and the publishers to get the word out about those books. So we're pretty aggressive. And if we work with us, you know, chances are you'll read about it or hear about it somewhere in the media, including on C-SPAN, as many of our authors have done over the years.
So isn't that something, though, that a publisher does as well?
You know, it is. I do think, you know, and particularly in this day and age, editors are overworked. A lot of them are editing 20, 30 books a year. And, you know, publicity teams are overworked. So I think it helps our authors to have that additional support, both on the editorial side as well as with publicity. And, you know, being in Washington and working with a lot of journalists, I think, you know, we tend to be trusted with you know, some of the most interesting books and exclusive interviews. And so when we work with our authors, we really try to pull out all the stops to make sure that, you know, that book is received well and heard about. And, you know, I think a complaint you'll hear from many who've written books over the last decade is that there's not enough support given by publishers to the publicity side of it, as well as to the editorial. And so I think just having those extra sets of eyes and hands to help support an author ends up making a big difference. So we try to do that as a value add at Javelin.
Well, Keith Urban, one of the truths, I think, about the publishing industry is that it's 80% left of center, and you don't come at it from that point of view. Is that correct?
Well, you know, I try to leave my politics out of it. I mean, it's true that I worked in Republican politics for a number of years, the Defense Department and in the United States Senate. But, you know, I work with authors left, right, and center. And you know, I view my job as being their advocate. And I don't have to agree with all of my authors 100% of the time. And I think, you know, we're an agency that supports free expression and, you know, works with a wide range of authors. And so, you know, I try to leave my politics outside of it whenever I'm working with an author. I think for some of our authors on the left who are Democrats, I think it helps sometimes to anticipate some of the questions and objections that they might get from the right. And conversely, working with conservatives and which is, you know, where we started our company. We work with a lot of conservatives. We were one of the only agencies in the business that was working with folks out of Republican politics. And since then, we've grown and really work with all sides, as well as some of the best journalists in the world, which we're really proud to do.
Have you ever turned down an author?
Yes, many times. In fact, we do it, you know, I mean, for many reasons. Sometimes it's because it's, you know, politics, but more often, you know, just business of being an agent is that, you know, we get, you know, probably a dozen to 20 proposals a week, and very rarely do we end up taking them on. You know, and there are lots of reasons to do that, but we end up saying no far more often than we say yes.
Keith Urban, one of the high profile authors that you did represent after he was fired from the FBI was James Comey. What was that process like?
Well, you know, James Comey is one of the first major authors in sort of the political sphere who was not coming out of Republican or conservative circles. So he was in many ways a formative client for us. We pitched him out of the blue, and my partner really deserves the credit for that. And, you know, after a couple email exchanges where he insisted that he wasn't interested in writing a book, we were able to get an in-person meeting. And, you know, I think we were able to convince him that getting his side of the story out there would be a real service to the country and a real service to history. And A Higher Loyalty ended up being a number one New York Times bestseller for weeks on end, and one of the best-selling political books of the last decade. And, you know, it was a privilege to work with him. He's a great man.
How much editorial input did you have into his book?
Well, like a lot of authors, we worked pretty hands-on with him, and he delivered a complete first draft without the help of any writer or collaborator, which is pretty rare for someone who's been in public office that long. He's a lawyer, so he actually was quite a gifted writer, but I think, as he would tell you, we spent some time with him reorganizing. It was mostly structural, helping him pull out more of a narrative, showing more than telling. And we worked with him over, probably 2-3 weeks, just crashing on that manuscript and getting it to the best possible shape and making sure that that sort of the storytelling really shined through. And I think, the success of that book, the reviews of the book bore that out. I'm really proud of that book.
Mr. Urban, profiles have been written about Javelin and yourself and Matt Latimer in The Washingtonian, The New York Times Magazine, and the word ghostwriter has come up in both of those profiles. Is that something that Javelin offers to its clients?
You know, I would say for some of our authors, they do end up hiring ghostwriters. Back when we started, we really did a lot more of that in-house, meaning, offer that editorial support. Our business has grown so much over the last decade that we rarely do that anymore. We have a stable of writers and researchers that we work with and connect authors with. It's not surprising that, folks that have been in public office or been CEOs need writing assistance from time to time. A lot of books are that way. And I think as long as you disclose that in the acknowledgments and say, how a book was produced, it's well above board. And so, at Javelin, our job is to produce the best possible book. And for people who aren't born writers or storytellers, sometimes it helps to bring in some editorial support, whether that's in the form of a full ghostwriter or collaborator or an editorial assistant, an extra set of eyes.
Mr. Urban, you were quoted in the New York Times profile as saying, books still have a cultural weight. What were you referring to?
Well, I think there's something important about holding a book and a physical book. And for, a long time, in the mid 2000s, there were a lot of obituaries written from the publishing industry. Ebooks are going to take over and, the physical print book is dead. And I don't think that's true. It's certainly not been borne out in our experience. And I think, when you have a book and meaning 100,000 words printed between two bound covers, it conveys authority, it conveys gravitas, allows you to go out and talk to media, do podcasts. And I think sometimes the medium through which you people hear about books and learn about books and decide to buy a book changes over time. I think publishing in terms of the traditional book industry is strong. Certainly the COVID era has borne that out. I think, the publishing industry profits are up. People were left with more time on their hands and reading at home more than they have been before. So I think publishing's far from dead. I think it's best years. They may be now, and I think they may be for some years in the future.
Has technology changed the publisher, author, agent publicity model in the last couple of years?
I don't think technology or anything in publishing has really changed, how important publicity is. Again, I think, podcasts are, now a very good vehicle and sort of the long form interview as opposed to, the network morning shows or some of the ways that, 10, 20 years ago were really the primary vehicles to book publicity. And I think now there are a lot more avenues to getting the word out about a book than there were before. And I think some of them are very successful. I will say one thing that's changed sort of technology-wise in publishing is sort of the advent of ebooks and instantly downloadable on your iPhone into your car, being able to hear an author read a book as opposed to, you sitting down in a chair and on a Kindle or a physical copy. The explosion in audiobooks has been something that's been, I don't think a lot of people were predicting a decade ago.
Keith Urban, here in Washington, we've all been exposed to the revelation, to the newspaper article in the Washington Post or somewhere. That's an excerpt from a book. How important is that revelation, that shock moment in a book?
It depends on the kind of book. If we would do a lot of history, do a lot of pop science. We do things outside of politics that don't need a big flashy excerpt or a push notification via the Washington Post that this bombshell book is now out, or something on the Drudge Report. I think it's more important for political books to have that kind of coverage and sort of sequencing a publicity campaign so that parts of the book come out, when the author and when the publisher wants it to, rather than having it leak out, which happens, particularly on these highly anticipated political books. Oftentimes the Guardian will get a copy early and sort of disgorge all the contents, all the newsy tidbits out there. And when that happens, I think authors aren't generally happy. So we try to get ahead of that and plan in advance, working with different reporters and journalists who are interested in the subject matter to get the book out and point them to passages that they'll find interesting and that a general audience will find interesting. So I think it's very important that that there's sort of strategic rollout and that that media is a big part of it.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned The Guardian, because it does seem that The Guardian newspaper out of London gets advanced copies of a lot of these books and can excerpt them and bring the shock value to light. How do you think that happens?
I don't know. Someone did a profile of, I think, the journalist who gets a lot of them. And it's anyone's guess as to how The Guardian gets advanced copies, but I know it's a big thorn in the backside of publishers. And we plan rollouts around it, and we try to game out when we think The Guardian is going to get an advanced copy. And sometimes we work that into our plan. Sometimes we try to preempt it. But it's a big mystery. I don't know. But kudos to them. They obviously have a system that works. Publishers work really hard in some cases, like we did in. With the Comey book, we kept it under lock and key for weeks, and we were able to hold that secret, a long time, up until the Thursday, Friday before publication, so 4 days before. And we, if a book contains truly explosive material, publishers will go to extreme lengths to make sure that the embargo holds as long as possible, and that folks like The Guardian don't get it 2 weeks early, which sometimes they do.
Keith Urban, I want to ask you a question about putting an author on tour. Here at Book TV, we get most every nonfiction author that you can possibly imagine. We find an event or an interview or something. But with President Biden's book prior to running for office, Promises to Keep, we could not get an event because it was being sponsored by Live Nation, and they would not let cameras in. Is this a new model?
I think it's been a model that's been tried. I know President Biden with that book, he partnered with, made a big sort of corporate deal with Live Nation to do book events around the country. I don't know how successful it was from a profits perspective. I think they're competing interests with a book rollout. I'm sure that that reality was frustrating to the publisher of that book, not being able to do, an event, a broadcast event with Book TV, which in our experience, and I think in pretty much everyone's experience, is one of the tried and true outlets to reach a book buying audience in any form of media. And I think I think that was sort of more of a one-off. I think in the COVID era, sort of that live events business has taken a big hit. It may come back in the future as we start to do more and more things in person again. But I have not, I've not heard of a lot of examples in the last 2, 3 years of sort of the live event as book selling opportunities be a big part of the business. I think if anything, it's declined substantially.
Has the pandemic hurt authors trying to get out on tour?
I think it is. It's the pandemic has certainly changed the way authors promote books, and where we used to do 10, 15 city tours around the country and bundle 500,000 books at each event, that hasn't happened. And so I think it's put more of a premium on earned media and doing you know, sort of more remote interviews to reach audiences. You know, there was a period early on the pandemic when people were doing, you know, book events by Zoom. And I think, you know, enthusiasm for those quickly waned. Those did not end up being particularly successful for authors and selling books. So, you know, I'd say in the last 6 months, you know, since the summer, I think Omicron has changed it, and people are dialed back the in-person events again. But I'm not sure that that's going to continue. We'll see. But I do think just not being able to go out and be with an audience speaking in person, has been harder, but people are still able to find books. You know, it's, you know, I think the pandemic has certainly cemented Amazon's, you know, status as the dominant player in terms of retail sales and people being able to, with a click of a button, have books delivered to their doorstep. That's just how people buy books these days. And it's a reality of life in 2022.
Keith Urban, what are the advantages and perhaps disadvantages of being located in Washington and not the publishing center of the world, New York City?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I think this was an underserved market before we started, you know, we started Javelin, in terms of just America has a fascination with politics and what goes on in the city. And, you know, I think we've been able, part of the reason we've been successful is we've tapped into that, and we work with authors who have interesting things to say that people want to hear. And so there was, I think, a void here in terms of publishing and helping authors think through books before we started. Certainly there's some good agents in DC, but I think we've helped sort of tell the story of journalists and political figures and people here. I think one of the limits is, you know, a lot of our colleagues who are editors that we work day to day, they are in New York, although for the last 2 years, very few of them have even been back in their offices. So they're all working remote. You know, we would travel up to New York every month to do author meetings, you know, pre-pandemic. And we haven't done that since. We haven't needed to, since everyone's sort of working remotely, and publishing's succeeded in, you know, making the remote model of work succeed. And so, you know, I think one challenge that we have is for a lot of our authors who are maybe not in politics or not journalists, convincing them that we, you know, have a, you know, a broader repertoire and, you know, record of New York Times bestsellers beyond politics is, you know, that's a conversation we have a lot. But, you know, we've diversified our list and have had hundreds of books over the last decade, about 100, I think 180, 200 books now, many dozens of which have nothing to do with politics. So, you know, I think it gives us, it serves a, you know, Washington market in a big way, being here and being able to do in-person meetings. You know, we're gonna keep building our list and keep doing things beyond politics as well as within it.
Well, Robert Barnett is considered the godfather of literary agents here in Washington, the lawyer with Williams and Connolly. Is he a competitor?
Well, look, I worked with Bob. You know, the first book I did was when I was working with Secretary Rumsfeld, and we worked with Bob together. And you know, Bob's been very successful and built up a great business over the last couple decades. And you know, I think he has the record for what is, you know, probably the biggest nonfiction deal in history with Michelle and Barack Obama. And so, you know, he's a formidable figure. He's very good at what he does. You know, I have all the respect in the world for him. So is he a competitor? I think there's some books that, you know, we pitch authors together and we win some and he wins some.
Well, if you've listened to us for the last 20 minutes, you've heard the name Javelin as the name of this literary agency. Where did that come from?
Interesting story, Peter. It was it's actually an homage to Matt, my partner, and I, our mentor, Donald Rumsfeld. His wife's Secret Service name, Joyce Rumsfeld, was Javelin, and we admired her, got to know her very well over the years, and we thought it was a catchy name. It didn't sound like another Washington cliche, and so we decided to go with it, and for whatever reason, it stuck, and that's how we're known, and we're proud to be associated with Joyce Rumsfeld.
Keith Urban is the president and founding partner of the Javelin Literary Agency. We appreciate you joining us on About Books.
Thank you, Peter. Appreciate it.
And this is About Books. This is Book TV's look at the latest publishing news and nonfiction books. Here are some books being published this week. In South to America, Princeton University African American Studies professor and native Alabaman Imani Perry provides a history of America through her travels in the South. Nobel Prize-winning economist Amartya Sen reflects on his life in the places he's called home, which include India, Bangladesh, and England. His memoir, Home in the World. And in The Economic Weapon, Cornell University professor Nicholas Boulder looks at the use of economic sanctions in times of war and peace. And also being published this week, New York University philosophy and neuroscience professor David Chalmers weighs in on our technological future and what it means to live in a virtual world. His book is called Reality Plus. And in Savage Journey, Peter Richardson looks at the writing life of Hunter S. Thompson from his early influences to his embrace of so-called gonzo journalism. Well, another new book that is just out is by theoretical physicist Leonard Mlodinow. He's appearing on our author interview program afterwards this weekend to talk about the advances in the study of emotion in the fields of psychology and neuroscience. Here's a preview.
Emotions play an important, vital role, I argue, in your everyday life, even in not maybe always moment to moment, unless you're talking about core affect, but emotional experiences happen much more often probably than people think about. It's not just when you get really angry at that driver who cut you off that's not the only time in the day that you're feeling emotion. You're feeling it in much more subtle and everyday normal situations and all through the day. And your emotions are what prompt you to do many of your actions. If you had no feelings at all, if you were just a robot with no feelings, when I was on Star Trek: The Next Generation, that was what Data was supposed to be. At least Spock was half human, but Data was purely, unemotional. What would cause you to even do anything? You wouldn't. You have no desire, no goals, no enjoyment, no joy. So why would you get up off your chair? Unless your program specifically said at 9 o'clock, get up and go make coffee or whatever it is that, our current robots do, but it would never initiate action on its own other than what was programmed into it. So I argue that I talk about how that works and how emotion is really vital. But let me say one other thing, and I know that you'll agree. I believe you'll agree with this, and it's an important point. I want to make clear that I talk about the emotion and rational thinking. And I don't mean by, I say that these are inextricable, that they are, not only is emotion not counterproductive, but there's no such thing as a purely logical, rational processing in your brain, that it all happens together and it works together. And I talk about how that happens.
And that was Leonard Mlodinow discussing his latest book, Emotional, on Book TV's Afterwards program. A reminder that Afterwards airs every Sunday on Book TV and is also a podcast available at C-SPAN Now or wherever you get your podcasts. Finally, here's a look at some of the best-selling books according to the Los Angeles Times. Topping the list is Michelle Zauner's memoir, Crying in H-Bart. That's followed by University of Houston professor Brené Brown's Atlas of the Heart. It's about making meaningful human connections. After that, Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter and creator of the 1619 Project, Nicole Hannah-Jones, looks at American history and slavery's legacy in present-day America. Then it's My Body, model and actress Emily Ratajkowski's thoughts on feminism and beauty. And wrapping up our look at the Los Angeles Times best-selling nonfiction books is comedian Mel Brooks' memoir, All About Me. And that's this week's publishing news and the latest nonfiction books. Thanks for joining us on the About Books program and podcast. A reminder that this is available as a podcast at C-SPAN Now, which is C-SPAN's app, or wherever you get your podcasts.